This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Looking to start your own website? The first thing you need is a domain name, and the best place to get one is at GoDaddy.com. With your domain registration, you'll get hosting, a free blog, complete email, and much more. Plus, as a MuggleCast listener, enter code RON, that's R-O-N when you check out, and get your .com domain name for just $7.49 a year. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Visit audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast to get the details.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Dobby!
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you.
Because the BAFTAs aren't real awards, this is MuggleCast, episode 189, for January the 15th, 2010.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We have Micah, Matt, and I here, three regulars, and also Jamie's back for the first time in a while. Hey, Jamie!
Hey, it has been a long time, hasn't it?
It's been such a long time. I've missed you.
I missed
you too,
Andrew.
We're all happy to have you back.
I'm pleased to be back. Everything's changed so much, hasn't it? But
really,
some things still stay the same.
Oh yes, of course. MuggleCast is our constant. In life.
MuggleNet's not, though, is it? Isn't it going to 2.0 soon? That's
yes.
That's a trendy word, 2.0.
It's cool, yeah. We'll talk about that in a little bit. It's pretty exciting stuff we have
cool.
going on. And also joining us this week is Andrea. And most of you may recognize her name from MuggleNet. She's been writing news posts for us for, a few months now, Andrea?
Almost a year, I think, actually, yeah.
Almost a year. Oh. Well, there you go. Well, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, Laura, Jamie, I don't know if you know this. Laura went to Costa Rica.
No way. Really?
Yeah. Sophie's to study there. Abroad for a semester. Mm-hmm. So.
Cool. Very
cool. Natives.
With the natives. Gonna feel crisp on the country.
She's going to teach them podcasting.
Yes, that's her mission. She's bringing podcasting to. She bought up an entire Apple Store supply of iPods, and she's going to saturate that country
is
with
dedication for you.
It
they
is.
Can't. They can't have been cheap.
It's very noble. So we have a lot to get to on the show today. We also have the final installment of Chapter by Chapter for Chamber of Secrets. We're getting that book out of the way. It'll be our third book finished in our Chapter by Chapter series. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Matt Britton.
And I'm Andrea Salazar.
Micah, it's our first show of 2010, and lots of interesting news items to discuss this week.
Well, first piece of news, there's a Deathly Hallows Deluxe Edition that's been signed by J.K. Rowling and Mary Grand Prix that's up for charity auction on eBay. And 100% of the winning amount is going to be donated to two not-for-profit organizations. 50% is going to be going to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. the Mid-Florida chapter, and the other 50% is going to be donated to Habitat for Humanity in Sarasota. So not only would you win this copy of the Deathly Hallows Deluxe Edition signed by J.K. Rowling and Mary Grand Prix, but there's a number of other prizes that are included. And it says, donated by Olivon, you get a wand, a cloak, and a scarf. Signed copies of MuggleNet's What Will Happen in Harry Potter 7, because, you know, nobody knows at this point. And Harry Potter Should Have Died. Two MuggleNet shirts, a signed copy of Melissa Nelly's Harry a History, and a National Multiple Sclerosis Society t-shirt and wristband. The auction runs until, I think it's next Thursday, January the 21st. And as of right now, there's 24 bids, and $1,825 is the highest bid.
Nice.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a really nice collection of items. I mean, obviously the best item here is the signed Deathly Hallows Deluxe Edition. Mary Grand Prix even went so far as to include, she drew a sketch of Harry in it, which is really cool.
Is it good? Oh, of course. She's, she's
yeah, it's not bad.
Like,
it's,
I can't, I forgot that, yeah.
Yeah.
Is her thing, though? I mean, it's in Florida, and I know she's from Florida, because when I was reading it, I was going to say National Multiple Sclerosis Society Scotland by accident, but I caught myself.
Oh.
So I was just wondering, maybe is this her doing?
I'm not, what do you mean? Well, no, this kid who put it together, Daniel, it was all him.
Oh, okay.
He had been in contact with us a few weeks ago, and that's how he got the MuggleNet books and the t-shirt. But actually, I posted this on MuggleNet, and I was like, you know what, this is really nice. I kind of want this. So I placed a bid.
Did you?
And I was quickly outbid. I bid up to $700.
What? Did you, Andrew? Oh, you're rolling in it. You can buy me something.
The reason I bid so high was I knew I wasn't going to win. And I hadn't even reached the reserve price. And as of right now, it's at $1,800, and the reserve has still not been met.
I wonder if he's put it as, like, $10 million or something.
Yeah, it's probably a lot. He says he expects for it to go between $3,000 and $4,000, so I guess it's in there somewhere. But the reserve, for anyone who doesn't know, means that someone could set a price on eBay and not allow it to sell unless it reaches that certain price.
That would have been so funny if you'd won and you didn't have the money to pay for it, and there's like all this coverage from around the world, and like altruistic Harry Potter fan makes a surprising bid on eBay, and then it's like, how'd you plan to pay for this, Andrew?
I thought I could afford it.
I would ask Ben to go in with me, or I'd run off to Vegas and try to win.
Try
some
to
money
win to it, yeah.
But yeah, this is a really great auction, and there's a link on MuggleNet if anyone's interested in bidding. Obviously a lot of money, but the collection's a very nice collection of items.
We'd like to remind you again that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like MuggleCast. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, go to audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast for your free audiobook.
What else is going on, Micah?
Well, there are finally some details beginning to emerge about the Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey dark ride at Universal's Wizarding World of Harry Potter theme park. Screamscape reported earlier this week that the ride system inside Hogwarts Castle is installed and functional. However, all of the scenery and special effects still need to be installed, programmed, and tested extensively before we will see the ride open. They go on to reveal that your ride experience will begin and end with an interesting little effect that will transport you through the use of the Flu Network, a giant fireplace and green flames.
I'll bet that's cool. I bet that is very cool.
Man. That'd be awesome if it was like the Tower of Terror ride at Walt Disney World or Disneyland, like flu powder.
Yeah.
When I read that, I thought that was awesome, an awesome idea to travel via flu powder. This ride, I mean, this is going to be a really impressive ride. We still don't have many details on it yet, but it's been described as capturing all of Harry's, what was the word Dan Radcliffe used? Something about his
forbidden journeys.
No, the chaotic parts of his life. So it's basically going to be a mashup of all these, and you're going to be thrown around through this ride as you're
you know, avoiding the Whomping Willow and stuff like that. It should be really cool.
Is like Harry? Are they going to have like animatronic Harrys?
I don't know. We don't know why.
I don't know.
Do you want to go make love to one?
if I have a seatbelt, then no.
Yeah.
Matt, there'd be no love in that relationship if you did that with an animatronic Harry. He'd just use you. He'd just use you for what he wants, throw you away.
It's fine. They have no emotions.
But, yeah, it should be very cool. And Jamie, do you think, I mean, you are a UK resident. Are you going to find yourself making a trip over to Orlando?
Probably not specifically for this ride, but if I was there or around in that area, I would absolutely make a special journey to go down there and go on it. It does sound very, very good.
Well, yeah, I mean, not just the ride, but the park as a whole.
I'd like to go, yeah. I'd just be scared that it wouldn't live up to the, like, hype that all, you know, because marketing nowadays, it just builds stuff up and builds stuff right. up, and they use such good techniques to make it sound so awesome. I just worry I'd pay my money to get there, and it would just, you know, be like a fall from grace type of thing.
Yeah. I have something to confess. I am not impressed with Hogwarts Castle.
You aren't, really?
Because if you got... it's pretty much finished being built, and, you know, there's tons of construction photos, but it's not... It's not Hogwarts. It's very... I don't know. It just looks like half of Hogwarts. There's not many big pillar or big towers. And even Steve Clovis, he admitted in the Ultimate Editions that he wasn't happy with how Hogwarts looked in the first couple of films. And now, you know, they really have this chance to make Hogwarts look amazing to you know, through our own eyes in person. And I don't know.
I doubt they can afford to, though, can they? Like,
I know.
Make it extra awesome.
Well, I don't know if they have all that room to make it an ultimate Harry Potter.
Money, like, it's still got to make
Hogwarts
money.
Castle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe they'll expand later. I'm just not that impressed with it.
Well, that's what they did in the films. Maybe they'll do it in the park.
Yeah, so that's true. Yeah.
It.
If it makes money.
it.
Are you not impressed because only half the castle is there?
Yeah, basically. I mean, when you look at the construction photos, it's like,
just
it's
close
cool.
one eye.
Are you upset it's not to scale, Andrew?
No, not the scale thing. I think they're using tricks to make it look like it's really far away by making it look really big, if that makes sense. You know, never mind. I don't want to get too deep into this conversation, but personally, I'm not. I guess we'll have to wait to see when it actually opens up, but right now it's just like, eh.
Do we know if we're going to be able to walk through the castle, or is it going to be like Cinderella's castle where there's nothing there?
Well, the ride is going to be this Forbidden Journey ride is going to be in the castle. So I don't think we're actually going to get to walk in it. When they first announced this park, people were like, oh, wow, we'll be able to go into Hogwarts and, you know, eat in the Great Hall. But I don't think it's going to be like that at all. The castle is just for exterior display.
Yeah. Well, and it's not a whole theme park. It's just, you know, just a land in the theme park, too. So, I mean, that was the original idea that everyone was thinking, that it's a whole theme park dedicated to Harry Potter.
Well, it still is a theme. I mean, they're putting $200 million into this project, so.
Right.
It's.
But, like, $80 million is probably per ride or something like that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask Jamie, though, are you going to go out and get your copy of the Daily Telegraph this weekend?
Is there something free in it?
Yeah, there actually is. There's going to be a DVD of the theme park for promoting.
Oh, right,
it.
Yeah. I probably will then. It's only like.
But
20,
I'm wondering if this
50p.
Is the same thing that was included on the Half-Blood Prince DVD.
It might be.
It probably is. I doubt if there's something new just for a newspaper. They always give away free stuff, and normally it's rubbish. So I don't know. It might not be. Right. It could be something new.
The Telegraph describes the DVD as. You can watch interviews with the stars of the film series and get a sneak peek of the amazing new rides and attractions. You can also view an exclusive magical 3D tour of the theme park and access brilliant interactive extras for your computer, including printouts, downloads, and an interactive attraction map that's just like the version from the films. So it sounds like the stuff we've seen on the DVD.
Probably. It's probably just rehashed stuff or...
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, Jamie, you can... And then on Sunday, that's Saturday. Sunday, you can get a mouse pad. A free mouse.
Yeah, mouse pad.
Wizarding World.
Now,
that might be more valuable.
Does it have the theme park on it? Is it a mouse pad with the theme park?
Yeah. What else is going on, Micah?
Well, Half-Blood Prince is still in the news. Jeez. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced that only 7 films remain in the running in the visual effects category for the 82nd annual Academy Awards, and Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince remains in the running, and the list is going to be narrowed down to three on January the 21st.
So what do you mean by it's still in the running? Have others been dropping off or something?
Yeah. Well, I think they start out with more, don't they, than just seven, and then they get it down to seven
like
and
flies.
Then down to three. Yeah, they drop like flies. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some weird process that goes on. But
they drop like Dumbledore.
That is controversial.
has any Harry Potter film ever won a Academy Award? An Academy Award?
I think it's won like set design or something.
Matt, look that up.
Okay.
Because I don't think I'm excited that Half-Blood Prince has gotten this far, but the Harry Potter films have never been seen as Academy Award material.
Right.
What, you know, they're really good, but I guess they just never make it over that jump, that hurdle.
Are they made for that, though, really? I mean, I don't know. Like, you look at Lord of the Rings and the amount of money they pump into, like, set design and costume design and stuff like that. And it is good on Harry Potter, but, everyone expects the costumes to be a certain way. Everyone expects certain things to be specific ways. So I don't know if I call them groundbreaking in special effects or direction or anything like that. They're just good at what they do.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think that's the best way to put it.
Do we think that they're going to do well, though? I mean, in this particular category,
I don't know
who it's up against.
I mean, Half-Blood Prince visual effects—they were great. You know, we never see any corny special effects in the Harry Potter films. I mean, there's a couple exceptions, but right now it's up against Avatar, and
it's probably onto a loser then.
Yeah, it's competing right now against Avatar, District 9, Star Trek, Terminator Salvation, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, and 2012. So, I think Avatar is going to win that.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I noticed that, as is usually the case, that Half-Blood Prince was nominated for a ton of BAFTAs.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sure they'll win at that ceremony.
Yeah, they always wanted the BAFTAs, don't they?
Someone once told me off once. Like, I said that the BAFTAs were crap versions of the Oscars, and someone told me that's really, really bad. You should be really proud of them because they're British and stuff. And I was like, well, no, they're really not that impressive. Whereas the Oscars are, you know, the actual award ceremonies. But maybe that's a bit harsh.
That's like somebody telling you should be proud of Hitler because he was German, if you were German.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a perfect analogy.
But it's along the same lines, right?
Well, maybe kind of, yeah.
Maybe that's discussion for another time.
But, wrapping this up on Half-Blood Prince, though, Michael Gambon was also nominated for an award for an Irish Film Television Award for his role as Dumbledore. So he finally got nominated for something after all these films that he's done.
Hallelujah.
I know, and he's an awesome actor as well. Do you know
I'm not seeing
really
any
weird fact about him?
Any award, any Oscars that any of the Harry Potter films have won.
What are you saying, Jamie?
Do you know a really weird fact about him, Michael Gambon? He owns 14 lathes. Right?
What's a lathe?
Lathe, you know, the like turning thing, woodwork, metalwork stuff, a lathe for like turning. Do you know that?
Like a steering wheel?
No, not a steering wheel.
No, I don't. No, I really don't.
Look, I'll get off Wikipedia so I can.
Are they very
all
expensive or something?
Well, not really, but just like you only need one, to be honest. It's a machine tool which spins a block of material to perform various operations such as cutting, sanding, knurling, drilling, stuff like that. And he's got 14 of them for some reason.
Does he have a fetish for them or something?
I don't know. Perhaps he does. But he's a huge fan of them, and he's got that many of them.
Good luck to Michael Gambon for being nominated in this. See, I think it's very well deserved at this point. He's up against Simon Delaney for Happy Ever Afters, Michael Fassbender for Fish Tank, and Aidan Quinn for The Clips. So
I only know Aidan Quinn.
Yeah.
I don't know any
of
those
people.
What else
is going on, Micah? Onward.
All right. Final piece of news here. Empire Magazine released a little bit of a Deathly Hallows set report over the course of the last few weeks. And the page-long report included new comments from Dan Radcliffe. And he said, the single most complicated sequence we've done in any of the films. He's referring to the Seven Potters scene. Everyone's changing into me and nobody really knows what's going on. I'm dressed up as everyone else and they're dressing up as me. And well, it's very confusing. My question is, why would he have to dress up as everyone else?
Yeah, I don't get why. I think he just, you know how Dan starts to like ramble sometimes?
Yeah.
I think that's what he got caught in.
Well, maybe it's part of the transformation, though, as he's like changing from hair from, say, Hermione to Harry. It could be. It's just.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Actually, yeah, that's probably it.
Well, yeah. I have to see. That's pretty cool. I've said for a long time now that this is my favorite scene in the book.
It will be an amazing scene, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, there was also a little bit from David Yates, and he said he watched the first assembly of Part 1 just last week, and the most interesting dynamic is that you're taking these three characters we know quite well away from the comfort zone of Hogwarts, and you really can't underestimate the odd power of that. He sounds like he's rambling a bit, too.
I was going to say, that's been done before. They haven't always been at Hogwarts all the time, so maybe it's just because they aren't there at all that it's
different. Yeah, I guess that's what he's saying. But the whole buzzword with this movie is road movie. Road movie. With Half-Blood Prince, it was comedy, sex, drugs, rock and roll. And this
road movie, they're going to be in like a camper van going down a road, traveling like the length of the country, chilling out.
It's like that Steve Carell movie where they're in that yellow bus. What is that movie?
Little Miss Sunshine.
Little Miss Sunshine. Yeah, it's going to be like that. But I'm already sick of that phrase, and they were using it at the Half-Blood Prince junkets, and now, it's a road movie. That's all we're going to hear
between now and
November.
That's annoying.
Yeah, but it is cool that he's already looked at Part 1.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I wonder when, because they did this interview like 6 or 7 months ago, and then he's quoted as saying last week. So was it last week 6 or 7 months ago, or last week 3 weeks ago when this article came out?
You know what that's like a real world analogy to that. Do you know when you walk past somewhere and there's a poster up and it says like this band playing here, and then there's the word tonight, and you're like, well, did someone post that yesterday, so I'm actually a day late, or can I go and see them tonight?
Yeah.
It's the stupidest thing in the world when people do that.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like an email when somebody will be like, hey, you want to hang out tomorrow? And you read it like 2 days after you get the email. That's why I'm a very good writer. I'll put tomorrow, and then in quotations or in parentheses, I'll put Thursday.
Andrew, that is genius. That is absolutely genius.
I am a great communicator. That's what I pride myself on.
Are you a 2.0 communicator?
If you were such a great communicator, I don't think MuggleNet would have been down over the past few weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to point fingers, but I will guarantee you all 100% this was not my doing. So let's talk about that. As everyone knows, MuggleNet was down for almost a week.
A week?
And it was not fun. I swear to you all, this was paining me as much as it was paining most of you. I laid in bed unable to sleep. It bothered me that people could not go on the site. I resorted to things that were very out of my character.
Like what? What did you do?
I can't say on the show. It's very dark. Very dark stuff.
He was outside.
I didn't know what
around.
To do with myself. I had to go outside. And what is this thing in the sky? It's so bright. But
you should have gone to a counselor or something.
So MuggleNet was down, and we attempted to move servers. We are so sorry that it was down. We know people rely on the site a lot for their news, and that's why, you know, it bothered me. It bothered a lot of us. But, you know, since we were down for such a long period of time, we decided to let people know why we were down. And the reason is we're getting ready for a new version of MuggleNet, and we're calling it MuggleNet 2.0, because this is really the first time the site has had a major overhaul. And we posted a preview, a little visual preview on the site the other day. It gives you a glimpse into what the new site is going to be. You can check it out on MuggleNet.com. We made the news post on January 11th. And we're really excited about it. It's going to have a lot of new features. It's complete. We have a whole new design. We're getting some feedback, and we may incorporate some of that feedback into the final design. One of the major things that we're doing is changing the body of the area, the body of the site where, you know, the news is posted and where the content sits to white or black text on white. And that's obviously reverse of what we have right now, which is white text on black. And people were actually kind of disappointed. Some people were disappointed that we were changing it. So I'm thinking what we may do is create an option so people could switch back and forth. You know, if you don't want that, the white background and black text, you can switch it to the black background on white text. But you Dylan.
Oh, really?
Emerson's brother.
Oh, right, yeah. Really? Because I forgot who Dylan was for a second there.
No, I'm explaining to the audience. but yeah, so we're really excited about it. It's going to have a lot of cool new features, and check it out on MuggleNet.com. The new design it's going to be a few weeks until it's up because we're actually still moving the site. So it's a whole big thing. But we apologize for the site downtime, and it pained us. Trust me, it wasn't fun.
Did you see the loving death threats we got?
Yeah, I saw you tweeted about that. What were you talking? Where were the death threats?
We got a death threat?
Well, I mean, they were very loving. Wow. I'm sure they were full of love. But yeah, they said they would exterminate us one by one if we didn't warn them again.
Oh, geez. Well, that's good. That means they really care about the site. Yes. So.
Or mentally disturbed.
We're glad you care so much you would kill us. Anyway, that's all for news, right?
That's it.
Well, let's get into Muggle Mail now. Matt, could you read the first email, please?
Sure. Our first email comes from Nick Worley, 15, from Little Rock, Arkansas. He writes, "Hey, Mugglecasters, I'm rereading Deathly Hallows, and I was wondering why Harry was being so stubborn when he refused to accept help with his mission from Lupin and other people who offered to help Harry. I know that Dumbledore told him to tell only Ron and Hermione, but Harry could still have used the help and protection. Thoughts? You guys are doing awesome, and keep up the great show."
He's just stubborn, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is, isn't
Not
he?
To put too fine a point on it, he's just stubborn.
No, I think you're right. And you know, he trusted Dumbledore when Dumbledore said, you know, keep it between yourselves. And I think he was absolutely right to tell Lupin to stay with his family.
Was it his job to do that, though? What? Is it the job of a teenager to tell him what he should do and not do with his family?
Well, he was getting into Harry's business by asking, you know, if he could help, if he could join
altruistically,
Ron and Hermione.
Yeah.
I know.
He was all up in his business.
Harry, up in his face.
Jamie, if you were in Harry's position, would you have brought Lupin along with you? Or would you have told him to stay with his family?
I don't know. I'd have handled it a bit more maturely than Harry did and not say the stuff he did, which I thought was kind of mean, because Lupin is in quite a tough situation. Like, I certainly do, you know, I read the books and Joe doesn't really always, you know, make it clear how much of an outcast Lupin is. Like, I think when you reread the bits that he says, he's sort of like, no one accepts him. It's like, you know, it's like being on the sex offenders register, really, like, of the Wizarding World type thing.
Good way of looking
at
it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and everyone hates him. No one talks to him. No one trusts his opinion, and he wants to feel useful, and he thinks he's done this terrible thing to his family. He thinks, like, he's inflicted this horrible, like, disease on his sons, and the sins of the fathers are visited on the sons, and he feels he's responsible for that. And so he wants to make himself feel useful when there's nothing he can do back home. I think it's a noble cause. Perhaps he should stay with his family, but I think Harry's a bit insensitive, really. When he's just trying to help.
Yeah, I suppose you're
right. He also grew up without a father, though. So I think he's thinking of Teddy at that point.
That is definitely true, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And as we find out at the end of the book, it all sort of comes full circle when Teddy loses his parents. So.
But the other thing is, if you look at the end of the book, the whole conversation that Harry sees between Dumbledore and Snape, Dumbledore never reveals to Snape anything about the Horcruxes. And I think that was kind of the theme that was going throughout the whole book. You know, only certain people could know this information, because if it starts to get out, I mean, even Lupin, I'm not saying he would willingly give up the information, but the more people that know, the greater risk it posed to what Harry had to do.
That's true as well. And Voldemort could have found out, and then he'd have put extra protection in, and, like, Harry found it hard enough to do what he had to do anyway. I think it's that kind of thing where if anything else had gone wrong, it would have been quite hard for her to write plausibly that Harry had won. But that scene was so good with Snape and Voldemort at the end. Oh, it was such a good scene.
Yeah, it was. Andrea, could you read the next email, please?
Sure. This one comes from Helen, 26, from Hinsdale, Illinois. She says, "Hi, everyone. I just listened to episode 187. In the discussion of chapter 14, Micah mentioned that he thought the reason Dumbledore seemed to be able to sense the presence of Ron and Harry under the invisibility cloak might be because he could sense the presence of one of the Deathly Hallows. JKR actually addressed this question in a live online chat she did after the release of Book 7. Jo was asked, why is it that Albus Dumbledore can see Harry under his invisibility cloak at certain moments? Is the cloak only infallible to those who do not own a Deathly Hallow? Jo responded, Dumbledore, who could perform magic without needing to say the incantation aloud, was using Hominum Revelio, the human presence-revealing spell that Hermione makes use of in Deathly Hallows, when she checked Grimmauld Place to see if it was empty. It would have been cool if Dumbledore could sense the Deathly Hallows, but sadly that wasn't the case. I love you all. Helen."
So there's the explanation for that.
You know, I don't like that answer.
Why? I don't like it. It's logical.
No,
yo,
but Mike, because
I want to hear this now.
No, think about all the times in the series, then you could just explain stuff away with Hominum Revelio. I mean, think about all the times Harry could have been caught by Snape when he was out of bed under the invisibility cloak. Oh, Snape could have just said Hominum Revelio and there goes Harry.
But, like, the thing that gets me about this thing is I like, you know, complete stuff that's so powerful it can't be undone, and, like, a simple spell that Hermione can use to check if there are people in, like, Grimmauld Place. You know, you could just walk along and keep saying that spell, and then an invisibility cloak would be completely useless against you. And since, what's his name? Luna's dad. I can't believe I can't remember his name. What's his name?
Xenophilius.
Yeah, of course. When he says, you know, but a true, you know, cloak of invisibility doesn't ever fade, and you just think, my God, this is a really powerful object. It's like a lightsaber or adamantium or something like that in X-Men. Yeah. And you're just like, if such a simple spell can reveal this, it can't be that good. Which is such a shame, because you're like, you know, it's such a cool object.
Yeah, that's sort of like the whole argument about, you know, Alohomora. You know, why are there locks if you can just unlock it with Alohomora?
And I thought spells weren't supposed to work on Harry's invisibility cloak anyway. Like when they tried to Accio it, I think. And where was it? Hogsmeade.
Oh, yeah, they can't get it.
That's true.
I think it's a much cooler answer to say that Dumbledore could sense the presence of a Deathly Hallow than to say he used this spell that, I mean, maybe it speaks to the power of Dumbledore. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the spell is stronger with him casting it than somebody else, but.
Well, he's also had possession of the invisibility cloak for a while, too.
Right.
So he may have been familiar with, you know, the presence that it has.
Jamie, could you read the next email?
Okay, this comes from Miriasha. I hope that's right. 13, from Burlington, Vermont. She writes, "Hey, I was listening to episode 187, and I have something to add to your discussion about what magic Mr. Weasley put on the card to give it a personality. I wonder if it had anything to do with the magic surrounding Hogwarts, and especially the Forbidden Forest. In the fourth book, when Ron thinks that Harry should bring in an aqualung to breathe underwater for the second task, Hermione tells Harry that Ron that Muggle things go crazy when they get near Hogwarts. Also, in the first book, when Neville falls off his broomstick in their first flying lesson, instead of falling to the ground, the broomstick lazily flies off towards the Forbidden Forest. I think that there are so many magical creatures and just magical pull in the forest that it gives items personalities. What do you guys think? I also want to say that in episode 186, you were talking about Hermione and Harry dancing and how Harry was trying to cheer Hermione up. And one of you said that Harry was trying to cheer her up because Hermione was down, that Harry had left. I don't know if anyone noticed this, but I wanted to point it out. I love the podcast, and I've been a listener since the beginning. Never stop."
I guess we meant Ron in regard to that second point that, you know, Hermione was down, that Ron left. But in response to her first point, I think that's...
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Because, Jamie, we were wondering why on earth, you know, the car had such a personality, you know, in Chamber of Secrets. And
don't they use the words when it comes back? They say it looks all crazy and, like, crazed, and it's got, like, mud and dirt on it. So I guess it does do that to you living in the Forbidden Forest. It changes you, like, and it makes you crazy.
Turns you into a warrior.
Yeah. Makes you primal.
Yeah, primal, exactly. Micah, could you read the next email?
Next email comes from Rhiannon16 of Australia, and she says, "G'day, guys, and Laura, and Andrea. First of all, I love your podcast.
Andrea, sorry.
First of all, I love your podcast, especially since I live in an Australian country town. And I often feel isolated from the Harry Potter community. I've been re-listening to some of your podcasts. I was listening to number 181, and I have a question. You've all talked about the Ultimate Editions being fantastic with lots of special features on them, which teased me so much that I was wondering if the editions have any chance of being released in Australia. I've asked every Australian fan I know, and we haven't heard anything. Once again, I love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Rhiannon, P.S., you still have a lot of Australian fans.
Was there any doubt?
No.
I don't remember doubting that, but thanks for writing in about this, because, okay, the Ultimate Editions came out in the U.S., but they still haven't been released in the U.K. and Australia. We still don't know when they're going to be released. We actually recently contacted Warner Brothers to find out about this, and Nick, who works on MuggleNet, he inquired, and we should be hearing back soon. So, we don't know, but it is kind of odd that they haven't released these internationally yet. So, we'll just have to wait and see. But we will let you know on MuggleNet.com if we get some dates.
Perhaps they're waiting for a special occasion or something. I don't know what, but might be.
Yeah, I guess so. They released them here in the beginning of December when the Half-Blood Prince DVD came out. So, many are wondering why they didn't come out at the same time before the holidays where they live.
Hmm.
Anyway, final email today comes from Harper Stevenson, 14, of the U.S. of A. He writes about the nude scene conjecture. Something I've noticed that's really been bothering me is the nude scene conjecture. How did none of the hosts seem to remember that Harry wakes up and finds robes before Dumbledore makes the scene? He wakes up, realizes he's nude, and robes appear for him to wear. Then Dumbledore appears or walks in or whatever, and they chat, and Harry goes back to being alive. Just thought I'd clear that up, since the conjecture has now been active for a few episodes now. I'm rather nitpicky, since Harry Potter was the first book series I ever really read back when I was six or so.
He's just died. I don't think he's going to care about being naked, is he?
Well, Harper's right. The thing is, Jamie, we were talking about the story. There's going to be two nude scenes in Deathly Hallows. Like, they confirm that Dan's going to be naked for this. And we had joked on one of the shows that, oh, Harry's going to be naked in front of Dumbledore. Dumbledore's gay, blah, blah, blah. So, but that was just a joke. And to be honest, I forgot that Harry puts on clothes before seeing Dumbledore. But I did remember this later on. I think somebody else wrote into it.
I was going to say, joke, something said or done to evoke laughter or amusement, especially an amusing story with a punchline.
So, yeah, we were just kidding around, but that is a good thing to clarify. Thank you, Harper, for pointing that out. And that does it for Muggle Mail this week. It's time now for Chapter by Chapter, and also, later in the show, we have a very special British Joke of the Day moment.
No, don't say that.
I don't know why it's special.
I don't know if it's that good.
We have a British joke of the day, and Jamie in true form is playing it down, so should be quite a second.
Cover my back.
All right, and so like I said at the beginning of the show, these are chapters 16 through 18 of Chamber of Secrets. This is our final installment of Chapter by Chapter
ever,
and Mike is going to lead us in the first two chapters, and then I will lead Chapter 18, the final chapter.
All right.
So over to you, Micah.
All right. Chapter 16, The Chamber of Secrets, just like the title of the book. So this chapter opens up. Harry and Ron have just almost been killed and eaten by Aragog. And they discuss Moaning Myrtle being the girl killed 50 years ago and how they're going to sneak away to see her when they realize that they have much more pressing issues, and those are the exams. And it's kind of like a comical part in the book where they've completely forgot about exams because of what's been going on with all their fellow students being attacked. And I know, Andrew, you put here, is it merely a sign of immaturity that they are complaining about still having to take their exams?
Yeah, well, I got kind of annoyed when I read this because I was thinking, why are they still complaining that they have exams? I mean, of course you would still have exams. It's not like all the students have had anything else to occupy their time. I mean, the monster's been scaring them, but they don't, you know, they haven't been all searching for it or anything. They still have time to study for exams. I just found it very immature.
Can I just say here, this is really weird because, you know, there's a monster going about killing people, okay, in this castle, and they still have exams, okay? We've had a bit of snowfall here, and 9,000 schools have been closed over the United Kingdom. So,
well,
does that say something about
you guys
Britain?
Aren't prepared?
No.
No, it's just different in the magical world.
Yeah, well, I think maybe that J.K. Rowling uses the whole exam thing just so kids can still feel related to the trio.
Maybe, yeah.
Like, they have exams just like I do or something. I mean, it doesn't really make any sense anyway putting it in, but I mean, that's the only explanation I can think of.
I think it just shows how young they are. I mean, and you know how immature they are, like you said, Andrew. I mean, they're not grown up yet, and they're caring about. Yeah. It just shows how their minds are working at that time.
They need to sort out their priorities.
They do. They really do. What were we gonna say, Andrea?
Just that it's probably just a J.K. Rowling making sure that everyone realizes they're still in school. Like they're 12 years old. They do have school. They have classes, and I don't know. I guess it might be a little bit responsible. I guess, although I guess they're not studying, so.
Yeah, well, it is a good way to keep them responsible. But regardless, I just don't see why they would complain. But anyway.
So Professor McGonagall announces that everyone who's been petrified is about to be restored later on that evening. And then I pulled a quote that says, "Just then, Ginny Weasley came over and sat down next to Ron. She looked tense and nervous, and Harry noticed that her hands were twisting in her lap. Ginny didn't say anything, but glanced up and down the Gryffindor table with a scared look on her face that reminded Harry of someone, though he couldn't think who." And just a couple minutes later, Harry realizes that she reminds him of Dobby when he was nervous and about to reveal vital information. But Percy, in the end, ends up scaring her away. And there's actually somebody sent in a tweet down here, and Ginny said that she had something to say that was so important. And I was wondering, if it was that important, why didn't they go after her?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe they just got caught up in they got so caught up in trying to figure out what the thing was. You know, they were all trying to figure out what was attacking Hogwarts that they totally forgot.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah. They just didn't think.
Maybe they believed Percy when he said that it was just something they found, that she saw him doing something. I don't know. Could be just gullible.
Maybe they wanted the book to last longer too.
Yeah. Well,
that would have been interesting if Ginny had. What would have happened? What if?
She never would have gotten taken, maybe, into the Chamber of Secrets. And as Matt said, it would have been a shorter book. But that question was tweeted in by 7Leah7.
This part right here reminded me of, I keep going back to this, I do it quite frequently, when Laura came up with that amazing discussion on the books being symmetrical to one another, and I can't remember if she noted this in her discussion that we did, but this is a good comparison between books. This moment is a good comparison between books 2 and 6, because in both of them we see Dumbledore departing and McGonagall taking over. And it's just another example of the books being symmetrical. 1 is close to 7, 2 is close to 6, 3 is close to 4, or 3 is close to 5. So, just wanted to point that out.
Well, speaking of McGonagall, Ron and Harry then try to sneak off to Moaning Myrtle's bathroom on the way to one of their classes. They are able to get away from Lockhart after convincing him that he doesn't need to take them the rest of the way. And, of course, Lockhart's gullible and will do anything that anybody says. So they end up being caught by McGonagall as they're going to Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, and they feed her this completely BS story about how they're going to visit Hermione in the hospital wing. And it was kind of it was weird because you could see that McGonagall was very emotional about the whole thing, and it's kind of almost as if Ron and Harry took advantage of her.
Yeah, well, that's totally what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
That is a really funny, like, sort of like a movie-like moment, though. Like, it reminds me of just like a typical classic movie scene where you try to do something like this and the person gives in. And do you think what they were doing was just, like, McGonagall really felt for them at this moment. She was like, oh, of course, I totally understand. But regardless, I mean, you know, the basilisk is still out and about, and why should McGonagall be okay with two kids sneaking around the school?
Do you think McGonagall knew it was a basilisk?
that doesn't make a difference, though. I mean, he's still the fact still remains that, you know, they could have easily be attacked, and why are they sneaking around? That's not cool.
But the whole reason they end up going to see her is because of McGonagall, and that's kind of how all the pieces of the puzzle come together when they go to see her in the hospital wing. So it's almost as if what would have happened if they went to see Moaning Myrtle and didn't go to see Hermione. They wouldn't have figured as much out as they did.
Maybe not as much, but I think Myrtle still would have had some valuable information for them.
All right, so they do get all the information about the basilisk and everything that's been happening around the school off of Hermione's little piece of paper. And they decide that finally after, you know, 16 and a half chapters, it's a good idea to go talk to a teacher. And they head off, I think, to the teacher's room to go speak with McGonagall. But they end up hiding in a storage closet that's in the teacher's room. And as they're there, they hear over the PA McGonagall telling all the teachers to gather. And it's found out that Ginny has been taken into the Chamber of Secrets. And again, a little bit more comedy now with Lockhart stumbling in and all the teachers saying that he should be the one that goes and try and figure out what the monster is and defeat the monster. And do any of these professors honestly believe that Lockhart has any capability whatsoever?
Well, more importantly, it's a bit irresponsible, isn't it? They're saying, go on, you go and try. This girl could die, but you go and have a laugh, and we'll laugh at you doing it, and then afterwards we'll take it seriously. It's ridiculous.
Well, this whole scene is ridiculous. Number one, you mentioned Lockhart. He's supposedly the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. None of them think he's capable of doing anything whatsoever. And then later on, like a few pages later, you hear about Percy's like casually sending an owl to his parents that Ginny's been taken by this monster and she could possibly be dead. You know, think about if you were at school and something happened to you. Wouldn't somebody call your parents right away, not like a couple hours later, have your brother send off a message to your parents that something terrible's happened to you?
Yeah.
It
does seem very odd. And the whole staff room thing, like, you're totally right, Jamie. I mean, yeah, we'll take it seriously after it's too late. Mm. That's basically what they're saying. But, and it's in a way, it's a weird thing. Like, they're doing this for themselves. It's not so much about Ginny, because they want to see Lockhart fail first, it seems. I wonder if Dumbledore was there. I wonder what he would have ordered. If he would have ordered Lockhart to go after him, or if he would have sent, you know, Snape, or he would have gone himself.
It was probably just to get Lockhart out of the way, so he wouldn't bug them when they were planning on something.
So this was sort of like a mission to kill him?
Maybe. Well, no, just to get him out of the way while they plan on what they're going to do about Ginny.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. I got you.
And that's the other question, though. With Dumbledore being gone, wasn't there a way to reach him for, say, Professor McGonagall to reach out to Dumbledore and get him back to the castle? I mean, we know that, you know, he later is reinstated, but that seems like a pretty soft way to have to get back into the school, as opposed to knowing that the school is in danger and one of the students is in trouble. You'd think he would come back a lot quicker. So Ron and Harry head out and decide that they're going to go see Lockhart, and it's revealed that Lockhart is a fraud. Now, I know we all read this book a long time ago before we just reread it now, but can anybody remember being surprised by this?
Honestly, I read this in 1999, so I can't remember.
Have you not read it?
I don't think I was.
No, I really haven't.
Andrew, that is shocking for the lead host of MuggleCast to not have read the book for over a decade.
I've read the other books more times, but not this one in particular.
Over a decade.
I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry.
When did you last read Twilight?
Oh, just last week. I mean, I've read that 50 times.
You traitor.
So, Harry ends up using Expelliarmus on Lockhart before he can use a memory charm on him and Ron. And I thought, you know, everybody makes so much about the fact that Snape was the first person to teach Harry his signature spell. And, you know, I took the quote out and says, "Shouldn't have let Professor Snape teach us that one," said Harry furiously, kicking Lockhart's trunk aside. So,
well, going back real quick, does anybody remember being surprised by discovering Lockhart was a fraud?
No. I don't think I was. I think I was just appalled that he was running away.
Yeah.
I was 10, I think, so. Yeah.
After the Pixies, it was quite kind of like, that was explicitly saying he was just useless. He couldn't do a thing.
I guess I can say I was probably really shocked when I saw that he was, moving out, fleeing Hogwarts.
He was just too good to be true, Andrew. You should have seen the signs.
He was too good to be true.
So they end up forcing Lockhart to go with them into the Chamber of Secrets, and they get to Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, and she tells them of how she died, and this kind of confirms the whole basilisk theory. And they open up the Chamber of Secrets, they slide down the pipe, and there's that whole scene where Lockhart tries to get back in charge and ends up erasing his own memory, which is kind of comical.
But that's such an interesting point, because if he'd actually wiped their memories and brought them back up, the entire series would have developed in such a different way. That's such an interesting point.
You think
well,
so?
Well, no, I just think it's an interesting point that it didn't work. Like, I know that the teachers didn't trust him and probably wouldn't believe him, but as we've seen throughout the books, the word of children isn't really counting for much, and Jo has that running through, and she thinks, you know, that, and Dumbledore even says that age is stupid when it forgets the, like, something of youth, the, like, you know, some energy of youth or something, and I think they'd have a hard time convincing people that a teacher's word of events was a complete lie.
Yeah, that's true.
It is funny, though. It's funny what happens.
This is where
hilarious,
Ron,
Jamie.
This is where Ron learns, his parcel tongue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this does begin a very interesting series of events throughout the rest of the books where we learn that, oh, wow, you know, we're going to get a different defense against the Dark Arts teacher every year. And there's several hints in this book about that going on. I know there's at one point Dumbledore says that he just does not have good luck filling that position. So,
we move on to chapter 17, The Heir of Slytherin. And it opens with Harry finding Ginny lying on the floor of the Chamber of Secrets with Tom Riddle standing nearby. And he says, "If I say it myself, Harry, I've always been able to charm the people I needed." And, you know, I thought this was kind of an interesting comment as he goes through talking about how he was able to get Ginny to do his bidding. And you think back on some of the other characters that he's been able to influence throughout the series that we see later on. You know, obviously Slughorn.
That is such a great parallel to Book 6.
It is.
That line.
Especially Ravenclaw's daughter. That's such, like, such a cool thing in the books that he charmed her. And, like,
and Hepzibah Smith, the Hufflepuff chick.
The Hufflepuff chick.
The Hufflepuff chick. Unless you're into, like, 70-year-old grannies or something.
She's the ultimate cougar in the Wizarding World.
That's funny, man.
And, you know, in this chapter, we start to get a lot of Horcrux references. You know, Tom Riddle talks about being powerful enough to start feeding Miss Weasley a few of my secrets, to start pouring a little of my soul back into her. And, you know, it's interesting reading this book now. I don't know what you guys thought, but, you know, starting to see all these Horcrux references that were there early on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, some people, I read some dumb blogger said a few weeks ago, and it really annoyed me. They pointed out that, I think it was a news article, I can't remember where exactly, but they pointed out that, oh, the Harry Potter fans, they really overanalyze everything. And if J.K. Rowling had actually set the book up, the series up this intricately to the point of, you know, all their theorizing actually makes sense, like she actually thought about the things that they're thinking about, Joe still wouldn't be done writing book one yet. And I think, no, that's absolutely not true. You know, Joe really did set all this up. You know, this theorizing that we do, it all makes sense. It was all set up by her.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the series so amazing. And, you know, Chamber of Secrets is where we really start seeing some of the deeper stuff. And, you know, that comes back into play 5-6 books later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Four or five books later.
Yeah, well, didn't she say that she was thinking of Half-Blood Prince to be the title of the second book?
Yeah.
Or she was thinking of almost exchanging the two in their place in the series.
Yeah.
So,
Yes, that's true.
So we learned that Tom Riddle has been controlling Ginny through the diary, and that he framed Hagrid for opening the Chamber of Secrets. And he mentions that Dumbledore was the only one who thought, really, that there was something wrong with all of that. But, again, we talked about Dumbledore before in this book, and it's like, why didn't he do anything if he thought that there was something wrong going wrong here?
He's a politician, though, Dumbledore. Like, he's a that's probably why he didn't ever want to be Minister for Magic. Like, he knows he can't just come out and say something. Like, they live in troubled times, and it's, you know, he knows, although he's powerful, he can't just say whatever he wants. And also, I think, like, people forget, like, I forget, definitely, that everyone knew about his backstory, and, you know, just because we didn't know, then everyone else knew, and I imagine he always found it hard to, like, stand up for things and do things like that because of his troubled past. Maybe.
So he had a 12-year-old boy do it for him?
Well, yeah. Maybe. Perhaps he is a coward after all. Actually, I shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but...
It's okay, it's book dead.
Yeah, that's true, book dead.
So
I'm film dead.
Yeah, kind of talking a little bit more about the first Horcrux, where I guess it's really revealed is when Riddle says, "But I wasn't going to waste those long years I spent searching for it. I decided to leave behind a diary preserving my 16-year-old self in its pages, so that one day with luck I would be able to lead another in my footsteps and finish Salazar Slytherin's noble work." And then he kind of coaxes Harry a bit to tell him just how he was able to survive the attack of Voldemort when he was just a baby. Now, I wanted to know, you know, did you think that this is essential at all for Tom Riddle to find out this information, or is it more for his ego that he just wants to know?
I think it's more for his ego.
Yeah. I mean, he knew when he was being transformed in Goblet of Fire.
Right.
Like, he knew everything.
That's a good point.
So... Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's his 16-year-old self asking him.
Could be.
Maybe he just expects to come back and wants to know.
Now, speaking of Salazar Slytherin, yeah. Andrew.
Oh, I have a confession to make, Andrea. So, your last name is Salazar, and I've always thought that, like, you know how some people don't want to put their real last name out on the internet? I thought you sort of had Salazar as your name, like, on everywhere,
alias.
Yeah, it was like your handle or something. And just before the show tonight, I'm like, there's so many Andrea Salazars. I didn't realize that, like, everybody wanted to, you know, do that with their name, but I didn't realize that was a popular last name. I just wanted to confess that.
No, it's real.
Oh, wow. That is something. You should make that your middle name, and then you can be, well... And then make your last name Slytherin. That'd be
Slytherin.
Andre,
you know, I should do that.
Your initials wouldn't be much to be desired, but.
Why? Well,
ASS.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how rude. How rude. Wash your mouth out.
That's why I'm always thankful my family didn't name me, didn't make my middle name Steven or something, because I would have very inappropriate initials. Anyway, go ahead, Micah. Back to this book.
All right. So Harry shows loyalty to Dumbledore, which ends up leading to Fox showing up with the sorting hat, and after Harry demonstrates this loyalty, Riddle ends up releasing the basilisk. Now, this whole fight ensues where Fox ends up poking out the basilisk's eyes, and...
Gah, gah.
Exactly. And the basilisk goes blind. And I thought it was kind of ironic that it's this monster that ends up knocking the sorting hat into Harry's hands. You know, I think it's kind of one of those J.K. Rowling things that, oh, isn't it convenient that the basilisk tail ends up knocking the thing that contains the weapon he needs to kill it right into his hands?
Well, how far away was it from him? Is that ever described? I mean, it wasn't too far away, so Harry could have still went for it. But yeah, it does seem very, very intentional.
Maybe
he's like cowering in the corner at that point. He's like, please, please, somebody help me. And then all of a sudden...
And then it comes right.
Yeah.
Maybe it's got powers that facilitate that, you know, like it needs to get there and it can't just float there itself, so it uses the basilisk to do it or something. I don't know.
It sort of jumped in front of the basilisk.
Yeah.
Basilisk's tail,
and then
that's
so Harry gets Gryffindor's sword out of the hat, he kills the basilisk, and he ends up being struck by one of the fangs that's in one of the basilisk's fangs. Now, Fox ends up healing him, but I thought it'd be an interesting question to ask. What would have happened if he had died? I mean, would we have had sort of that King's Cross scene similar to what happened in Deathly Hallows?
Well, Dumbledore wouldn't have been there, right? Well, I guess
no,
he could have.
Maybe not.
No, no, he wouldn't. He wasn't prepared. He wasn't prepared to die. Like, if the snitch was there, it wouldn't have opened, so he wouldn't have been ready to, like, go to that King's Cross scene. I don't think he would...
That's
I think
true.
He'd have just died. Like, otherwise, he could have done everything he needed to then. The whole point was Dumbledore preparing him throughout the books. But he's very
it's
lucky.
It's too early for him to die, too, I guess, right, in the series.
Voldemort didn't have Harry's blood in him yet, so he wouldn't have... Well, I guess he wouldn't have been able to come back, but... He wouldn't have been in limbo, I guess.
And Joe wouldn't have made so much money as well if it had ended then.
Right.
Two books.
That's factor number one.
Something else that happens here is when Fox was trying to heal Harry, Riddle tries to use Harry's wand to get Fox away. But would any spell work against the creature whose feather or hair is in the core? I thought...
That's an interesting point.
Think about,
very interesting.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I think we see in this that's the case, right? It won't work against him. It won't work against Fox.
Yeah, Fox just kind of flies away.
Yeah.
What did you think? I mean, this is something that I always wondered. This is kind of also in Book 5, but what do you think since when a wand made from the fabric of that magical animal, wouldn't you think that the animal would have some type of protection against that wand? Because in Book 5, Voldemort blows up Fox against the fight with Dumbledore, and I always just wondered, that's Fox's hair that just blew him up.
That's true. That's, yeah. Maybe it's because it's his hair that it blew him up. Like, there's some type of thing where they couldn't handle the power, and he blew up because of it. Like, he just exploded.
Well, he didn't just explode. I mean, he got reborn through the ashes, but...
Maybe it's like a reset switch. It, like, puts him back to a baby. But if he hadn't been a phoenix, what happens if it's like a unicorn wand and then it hits a unicorn with a spell?
I don't know. I think unicorns have learned to stay away from Voldemort.
Yeah, I agree. You'd be a stupid unicorn if you hadn't.
Send in your feedback about that, listeners. We'd be interested hearing what you think about that.
So Fox delivers the diary to Harry, and there's this moment where Harry just somehow knows how to destroy it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about this. This seemed very scripted. Like, he just takes the basilisk fang and just starts stabbing it. Like, I would have liked to have seen some logic here, even though I don't think Harry had much to go on.
I would just stab myself.
Why? Why would he be suicidal?
I don't know. That's the first thing that'll go through my mind.
Emo Harry.
Oh.
I mean,
yeah.
So,
I don't know.
He saves Ginny.
Having a diary with a fang. That's the first thing that comes through my mind.
Maybe you should see a counselor as well, Matt.
Yeah, I think we need to take you to counseling. Go ahead, Micah.
Yeah, so he saves Ginny, and they exit the chamber, and they're able to get back to where Ron and Lockhart are, and Lockhart is completely clueless as to where he is, and eventually, Fox shows back up, and I thought it was funny at the end that Lockhart refers to the ride on Fox as being like magic, and also that Moaning Myrtle is disappointed Harry wasn't dead and couldn't share her toilet. But there is an interesting point that Ron makes at the end when he says Myrtle has grown quite fond of Harry, and that Ginny has some, quote, competition.
Why did you find that interesting?
Well, it's kind of laying the groundwork a little bit.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hasn't Ginny always had competition with Harry?
Yeah, I mean, all the girls want Harry. He's the chosen one.
Yeah, but early on. This is very early on.
Yeah, true. He hasn't developed yet into the man he ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great line in the movie, too, when Lockhart just yells, "It's just like magic!"
It's better than Harry's line in Goblet of Fire, where he says that he loves
magic.
That's a terrible line. That's such a bad line. I can't believe they left that in. They must have escaped the editor's room. Because
they didn't just leave it in. They left 3 seconds before and after.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's like...
There's always one moment.
They wanted you to savor that moment.
It's just a shame it didn't work.
not at all.
All right, and that leads us into the final chapter, Chapter 18, Dobby's Reward. They enter McGonagall / Dumbledore's office, and they find Mr. and Mrs. Weasley there, and Dumbledore, he's back now, and of course McGonagall. And
of course.
When we see them coming back, I wonder, you know, why were they all sort of just chilling in there waiting? Why didn't Dumbledore and McGonagall see the need to go down there and try to fight with the trio? Was it just destiny that, or was it just destiny that Harry and Ron were to be the ones who fought, or what? What's the
maybe
deal?
They were just waiting, honestly. And then as soon as Harry and Ron came up or something, they were talking to each other like, okay, they're coming. Let's just act like we knew this whole thing would happen this way. It would all turn out okay. Oh, well, Harry.
Well, is that what really happened? Because I still don't understand it. Do you guys have any theories as to why Dumbledore and McGonagall primarily did not go into the chamber?
They don't speak
Parseltongue.
Did they
know that Harry and Ron were down there?
Yeah, but could they trust Harry and Ron to defeat Voldemort or Tom Riddle?
They had Lockhart.
Yeah, and Forks.
That's true. I guess that was the only explanation.
Bad things happen when Dumbledore and Voldemort meet, so maybe they wanted...
Things get blown up
when they mate. People get encased in water and like have fiery snakes after them. It's not the kind of thing.
I think they just didn't have a clue. I mean,
that's probably it. At least
McGonagall didn't. They had no clue where the chamber was. They had no clue what was going on in it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, McGonagall especially. I mean, she was. I mean, you even said she was like emotionally distraught.
And so Harry tells them the whole story of figuring out what was petrifying people at Hogwarts and where the chamber was located. And Mr. Weasley, in a very odd move, decides to berate Ginny about the dangers of interacting with an object that can, quote, think for itself if you can't see where it keeps its brain, which was pretty funny.
That's oddly specific.
But I was wondering why he went so hard on his own daughter. I mean, and Dumbledore points this out, much older wizards and witches have been fooled by Voldemort. So why is Mr. Weasley, you know...
Well, his daughter almost died. He's scared.
So why is his first reaction, let me yell at you for falling into Voldemort's trap?
That happens to every parent.
He's
when every parent comes up to their child who almost killed themselves or did something very dangerous, the first instinct is to be very upset.
Yeah, that's so true.
And tell them never to do it again.
That's so true, yeah. So...
And then like 20 minutes later, they come with an ice cream cone saying how.
But it wasn't their fault. That's my point.
Of course, and they know it wasn't her fault. But they were, you know, the emotions got the best of them.
All right. Well, Matt, you're a terrible parent.
Whatever.
You will be a terrible parent. So then McGonagall goes to get a big feast prepared. Ron takes Lockhart to the hospital wing, and Harry and Dumbledore talk alone in Dumbledore's office. And Dumbledore says that Harry's display of true loyalty to Dumbledore could have been the only thing that sent Fox to him. Because, of course, Harry was wondering. Yeah, it's a very cute moment. And then Harry voices his concerns over the similarities between himself and Voldemort. And Dumbledore explains that some of their similarities, namely speaking Parseltongue, were passed when Voldemort tried to kill him as a baby. And then big Horcrux moment in here. Harry says, Voldemort put a bit of himself in me? And Dumbledore says, it certainly seems so. Now, of course, Joe later confirms, after Book 7 came out, that Harry wasn't really a Horcrux. Like, he sort of was, but wasn't really. But this, you know, this was a big sort of Horcrux moment, wasn't it?
He was an unintentional Horcrux.
Yeah, exactly. And then Dumbledore makes another famous quote right here, which people recite to this day. I wish Ben was here.
it's his favorite one, isn't it?
You don't have audio of it somewhere? I mean, there's got to be. How many times has he said that on the show?
Yeah. There's only 75 episodes where he said it.
Yeah.
You can't pinpoint the exact one.
He says, it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are, far more than our abilities. Ben actually reworded it.
He did. He got it wrong, didn't he?
But, yeah. But anyway, we got the gist of it. So that's a great line. It is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are, far more than our abilities. And then, of course, Lucius Malfoy storms into Dumbledore's office with Dobby at his side, and Lucius voices his concern over Dumbledore's return, and Dumbledore rebukes by revealing to Lucius that the 11 other governors wanted him back after Ginny was attacked. Dumbledore goes on to explain to Lucius that the diary was only uncovered thanks to Harry and Ron, and so Lucius is very angry at this. And as he's on his way out, Harry brings the diary back to Lucy, back to Lucius in Harry's sock. Lucius rips it off the sock, tosses it at Dobby, and Dobby sees this as being freed. And, of course, Lucius freaks out, but Dobby protects Harry. And, you know, he sends a spell at Lucius that sends him flying. And so all is well. We learn lots of good news at the feast party that follows. Most interesting, exams do end up getting canceled. I don't approve of that.
One of the things I thought was kind of ironic about the Dobby scene is he says to Dobby, "Promise you never try to save my life again," and that's exactly what he ends up doing.
Yeah,
thank God he did.
Then he dies.
Yeah,
I guess that was a little foreshadowing right there.
Yeah, and there's no Hogwarts without you, Hagrid. That was another terrible line in the movies.
Oh, shut up! That was a.
Did you cry?
Oh, it's a terrible line, isn't it? Oh,
and so then everyone heads home on the Hogwarts Express, and everybody lives happily ever after, until Prisoner of Azkaban.
Until the next.
But it's so funny how these books always end so happily.
Yeah.
At least the first couple.
Well, I was glad it ended on a happy note, because that was the last time in the film that we got to see Richard Harris.
Yeah, that is quite sad.
Smiling, a little twinkle in his eye.
It is.
Sad that everyone was crying, though, too, in that scene, too. It was kind of sad.
Okay, so that's it for Chamber of Secrets. I can't believe we're finished. That was, you know, what I love about these first two books is, you know, there's 18 chapters in each. So we can get through them nice and quick, but Prisoner of Azkaban gets longer, of course.
Then Half-Blood Prince is like 400 chapters. Well, Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, so that finishes the last... Book. Last short book. So let's have a little quick review of Chamber of Secrets. A couple things worth discussing here. We were introduced to quite a few new characters in this book. Just to run through the most prominent ones. Lockhart, Colin Creevy, Moaning Myrtle, Tom Riddle, Lucius Malfoy, Arthur Weasley, Fox, Cornelius Fudge, Aragog, and Dobby. Who do you think was the most interesting out of all of those? Most interesting, you know, the one you really enjoyed seeing the most in this book?
Dobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? I was going to say Lockhart.
I'd say Tom Riddle, just to be controversial.
I kind of want to say Lucius.
Well, I'm glad to see that we've reached an accord.
A verdict. Well, I think...
Okay.
With Lucian, mm-hmm. or with Tom Riddle and Dobby, you can make the point that they have the biggest influence throughout the series.
Yeah. And what about most meaningful moment in the book and or chapter? I think most of the meaningful moments came out towards the end in these last few chapters that we discussed. Namely, Harry and Tom Riddle's fight, Harry and Ron's encounter with Aragog, and Lucius being exposed and unintentionally freeing Dobby. That was one of those, you know, yeah moments where we get to
see everything go our way. That's a great piece of writing as well, because, you know, he got freed because Harry wants him to be free, rather than, it wasn't like plot dictating what happened. It was, if Harry hadn't been the person he is, Dobby wouldn't have been freed because he wouldn't have wanted to free him. So it's quite, and then Dobby obviously, like you said, went on to influence the whole of the book. So it's like Harry is making his choices and his choices cause everything to go right. So it's quite an interesting point, that one. That's probably my most meaningful moment.
Yeah,
that one.
I agree. That's
quite
point.
Interesting.
And lastly, best quotes from the book. And again, I mean, it's not that we're doing lazy research, but I think a lot of great quotes came from these last few chapters. Tom Riddle at one point says, "So this is what Dumbledore sends his great defender: a songbird and an old hat." This is, you know, just the beginning of several examples of where Tom Riddle or Voldemort does not think everything through. We see him make multiple mistakes throughout the series, and this is just another one. I mean, does he really think that Dumbledore didn't send him worthwhile items? Is he really that stupid?
He's arrogant.
I think, yeah, and dismissive. But I wouldn't have thought that he'd think that Fawkes, like, it sort of contradicts what Voldemort is, because he's the most powerful wizard of all time, which means, like, if you think of a Sith Lord, you wouldn't think that they would write off the substance that gives them their power, whereas, you know, Voldemort knows that Fawkes' feather is in the thing, so even if he doesn't know what the connection is, you'd think he'd make the connection.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I don't know.
Another good quote from the series, It is, of course, we talked about this earlier, it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are far more than our abilities. And another Dumbledore quote that stood out, the best of us must sometimes eat our words. That's so true. Yeah. Sometimes you gotta just fess up.
It's a great line.
Jamie, you know, this is a good time to tell you that you need to learn from that quote.
What just words kidding. Do I need to eat?
Oh, many. I'll start searching through our transcripts and finding some.
All right, cool. And then I'll
something
eat them.
Something about eating 50 sausages one time.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that. I don't know. I must have been tired or on something because I can't believe I agreed to that. That was stupid.
I think you need to start doing more outrageous bets like that.
Maybe. What was the bet?
I can't remember. Does anyone Micah, do you remember?
I think it was depending whether Harry lived or not. Or if Harry was a Horcrux.
Oh.
I don't remember.
Oh, what a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. 50 sausages, though. That's a hell of a lot of sausages.
Yes, you promised you would eat 50 sausages if Harry Potter died in book 7.
But
he didn't.
No. But you.
Oh, right,
but that's
so
debatable.
Okay,
oh, yeah, but I think we argued that he sort of half died, so you should eat 25.
Oh, yeah, that's true. See, 25 is doable, but I'm a big fan of organic free range meat at the moment. I don't eat any, like.
Are you a vegetarian now or something?
Battery farm. No. I just like. I went online, I saw a couple of, like, Petter's videos, and after that, I was like, nope. And Sophie convinces me as well a lot. I don't. Yeah.
I see.
I'm a good boy. I'm a very good boy when it comes to eating meat.
All right. Well, let's not forget that YouTube video, that Big Mac challenge.
Oh, yeah.
So you've changed that what you're saying. You're not the man you used to
wouldn't,
be.
I wouldn't eat a Big Mac again. Put it like
I
that.
I got it.
I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
I wouldn't do that.
All right.
I do believe that's a good thing as well, so.
Okay.
You eat the chicken nuggets.
No. I condemn meat, Matt. Condemn meat. Tortured meat for all of its life. That's why I don't. You shouldn't as well.
Well, I only eat meat that's through suicide.
What?
Through suicide? Well, it's like not... Hairy Gary. They put the thing in. Twist it up.
Okay, well, that does it, like I said, for Chamber of Secrets. So we won't have quote quiz this week, but next week we will get into in a couple weeks, we'll get into Prisoner of Azkaban chapters 1 through 3. Woohoo! Send in your questions and feedback about these upcoming chapters now, as well as the chapters we just discussed. And to do that, you can go to mugglecast.com and click on contact, and you'll be able to send in your feedback there. So before we completely wrap up chapter by chapter today, let's get through a few tweets that we received as well as some emails. I'm going to try to get through these quickly. First one's from Project Alice. Why didn't the poison instantly kill Harry? A 12-year-old boy versus giant basilisk venom. Some spiders only take minutes to kill you.
That is a fair point, yeah.
It is. Yeah. Maybe just for to make it more dramatic.
Dramatic effect, yeah.
And he did it in pain as well. If it was that, like...
Yeah.
That powerful,
he did scream
potent.
Like a girl after he got stabbed.
It's typical. Typical Harry.
Gabby SM11 writes, this may be a dumb question, but if a phoenix's tears can heal anything, how come Fox didn't heal Dumbledore's hand in Half-Blood Prince? I think Dumbledore didn't want it to be healed.
What?
He just knew it was his time to go.
The curse was too powerful, though, wasn't it? That was the point.
Yeah. Well, he accepted his fate. I think that was also in...
Well, yeah. I agree with what Matt said, because the whole reason he puts it on is because of, you know, he's overcome by the power of the Deathly Hallows. He wants the ring on his hand. He wants to sort of feel the power of it all. And I think that greed, he kind of accepts his own fate. And, you know, going off what Jamie said, the curse is just so powerful. I don't know that Fox could heal it.
Yeah.
Right, it's the whole dark magic excuse.
Yeah.
Alexandra M. Off writes, Dumbledore was one conniving man. He continually deceives Harry, but this reflects Harry's age. One must remember that he's 12. Well, we've had discussions about that, I think. But
the whole pig for slaughter.
It is a controversial issue, isn't it?
Yeah, pig for slaughter, yeah. That was a very good discussion we had.
Amazing.
Next piece of feedback comes from Sunday Rain 23. How did Dumbledore get the diary back from Lucius Malfoy after Harry freed Dobby? Did Malfoy leave it on the floor, or... I think Malfoy just left it on the floor, right?
I have no idea. That's one of those weird...
That wasn't written
things.
In, was it?
No, it wasn't written in.
I think he sort of just left it on the ground.
Well, he asked if he borrowed it. Harry borrowed it from Dumbledore, so he'd probably give it back.
Maybe. Same person writes, did Ron just not notice Fox enter the chamber, or is there another way to get in? Huh. Fox probably just flew over him or something.
Yeah. Ron does. Or he came in really quickly, like a plane.
Yeah.
Like a jet.
And Ron doesn't, if his character is to be believed in the movie, Ron doesn't think too fast, so.
Well, and it's also a chamber. Yeah. There was probably a different exit.
Or entrance.
Yeah.
Maybe he can apparate.
Ooh. Maybe he cried his way through. Yeah.
Curdy Kermit writes, why didn't Fox die when she punctured the basilisk's eyes? She couldn't have done it without looking straight into it, right?
Not to be controversial, but isn't Fox a he?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't he? Maybe.
Maybe she just.
Yeah.
Maybe he just, like, aimed and went with it.
Yeah, or closed his eyes. I mean, he ain't dumb. He knows what he's facing.
Well, in all
and
fairness,
huge eyes
Fox
well.
Can't really die. I mean, he just gets reborn anyway. Yeah. So,
and he gets blown up with ashes and blinds the basilisk.
Exactly.
Yeah. I bet he just gets into like pub fights and bar fights all the time because he knows he can just get reborn even if he gets killed and stuff. He brawls all over the place, Fox.
Nydia 112 writes, do you think that Dumbledore knew that the diary would be so valuable or that it was a Horcrux?
Yeah, and I pulled that quote from Half-Blood Prince where Dumbledore says, 4 years ago I received what I considered certain proof that Voldemort had split his soul.
Oh, that's a great, great connection, Mike. A brilliant connection.
That's Thank a pretty you. Badass line, too.
That's awesome.
4 years ago I received what I considered certain proof that Voldemort had split his soul.
Yeah, it's a great line.
Yeah.
And it's on page 500, exactly.
American edition.
Okay, so Jamie, it is time now for your British joke of the day.
This I is hope going to live up to
it's
it.
The first one of 2010. This segment is now 6 years old? Five years old.
It's something. Well, when did the show start?
Well, I should mention this. I realized that we're approaching our fifth birthday, which is very exciting.
Fifth birthday?
Yeah, it'll be in August.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, so.
That's insane. We have to do something so special for that.
I think so.
Some type of huge party in Vegas.
I'm down for that. All right, so Jamie, let's hear it.
All right, going with the controversial theme, it's a bit controversial. Not really, though. I don't know. A man walks into an emergency room with two black eyes and a broken nose. The doctor asks him what happened. Well, says the man, I was having a nice round of golf with my wife. She sliced her ball into a pasture of cows. We went to look for it, and while I was rooting around, I noticed that one of the cows had something protruding from its rear end. Sure enough, when I lifted its tail, there was my wife's golf ball. And asked the doctor, well, the man said, that's when I lifted the cow's tail, pointed, and yelled to the missus, hey, honey, this one here looks like yours.
Wow.
Wait.
That is something, Jamie.
That's not too bad.
No.
Is it?
I mean, no. We're going to be 5 years old. We can hear those kinds of jokes.
That's totally G right there.
Well, thank you, Jamie. We always rely on you for a good bit of humor on the show.
Good bit of wholesome fun.
Really, the whole episode is one big British joke of the day because Jamie, you know, inserts British humor throughout the entire show.
You know, Andrew.
Oh, come on, Andrew. You would have made me blush in a second.
There was one email, just one really quick thing that Carson 14 of Ohio brought up, because a couple of people asked this, that if Harry saw the basilisk through his glasses, would he have been petrified?
Oh. Yeah. I don't know. This is sort of debatable, because it's like, you know, it's sort of like the whole mirror thing. If Hermione was ready to look at it with a mirror.
But that's a reflection. So was the water. I mean, he doesn't see the basilisk through a reflection if it's through his glasses.
It's actually more concentrated, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a direct convex.
Yeah,
or concave.
It's direct contact with your eyes.
So he'd die twice.
He would actually die.
So
magnified because of the glasses.
He'd be double petrified.
Yeah, double petrified. No, well, no, he'd die, wouldn't he?
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Which is like being double petrified.
Okay, so before we let everyone go today, we want to remind you to vote for us on PodcastAlley.com. We're currently not in the top 10 list, so please do vote for us. Please do vote for us at PodcastAlley.com. You can vote for us by visiting MuggleCast.com, and we're going to put a link there to... You can click on Podcast Alley on the right under community outlets, and we appreciate your votes. We also want to remind everyone, we hope you go to Infinitus 2010. The site is infinitus2010.org. The event will be held in Orlando, Florida from July 15th to the 18th at the Universal Studios Orlando Resort. It's going to be an amazing event. They actually just announced...
What a great idea.
Yeah, they actually just made a pretty cool announcement. A Harry Potter sequel will be premiering at Infinitus. It's going to be making the premiere. So that's very cool. As we discussed on last week's episode, a Harry Potter musical was very successful, very popular in the Harry Potter fandom and on YouTube. And now the sequel to that musical is going to be premiering at Infinitus. So very cool stuff. Infinitus2010.org, again, is a site. Hopefully you can register and attend. We hope to be there. We hope to be doing a podcast there.
I say we audition.
For a Harry
Potter... Yeah, well, a Harry Potter sequel.
Do you have the... I don't think you can sing.
Do I have the credentials? I have to get my resume.
Yeah. Put that together.
Work on it.
And also, just you know, every once in a while, we like to throw out happy birthday wishes to some of the listeners. And Pablo wrote in to ask us to wish his friend Laura a happy birthday. She turns 17 on January 19th. So happy birthday to her. That's wonderful.
Feliz cumpleaños.
She's a big listener and fan.
Well, so I figured she's in Colombia, so.
Do you know?
Oh, see.
Is that near where you used to live or something? What are you saying?
Andrea? No, she's speaking Spanish. She's saying happy birthday.
Oh.
Got it. And you keep us.
Sorry. You're so cultured there. Mr.
It's like
Sims.
Having Laura back all over again.
Yeah, I've been corrected. I'm just kidding. Anyway, we also want to remind everyone that to visit MuggleCast.com, it has all the information you need to learn more about the show. You can contact us. You can find our community outlets. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter and also become a fan of us on Facebook. And also to vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. Everything you need is right
there.
Do
everything.
On MuggleCast.com. Jamie, I can't believe you actually have a Twitter now.
Yeah, I do. I finally
any of us?
Jumped on the bandwagon. Yeah, I am. I'm following Andrew. I think I'm following you as well, Matt, because I remember seeing a message from you. I'm pretty sure I clicked follow. Okay. I don't know, though.
I wouldn't follow, man. He's not very interesting.
He's not interesting.
Oh, whatever, active.
I don't follow him.
Active. That's such a cool name, Andrew. Active. You're like a superhero. Active.
Well, what's active your Twitter man. Name if people want to follow you, Jimmy?
I was going to do a shameless plug. It's twitter.com/LawrenceJamie, backwards, my name backwards. Andrew, you've currently got over 8,000 followers, and I've got about 710. So if I beat Andrew at some point, if I get more than him, I'll eat something ridiculous. I don't know what yet, but I'll put it on there. Maybe not 50, but perhaps like 20 organic ones, free range ones, maybe.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, I'll come up with a thing to do. So please follow me. I want to beat Andrew.
Okay, that's a pretty big challenge.
You've got like 12 times as many followers as me.
Well, start tweeting some stuff about Harry Potter, and they'll want to follow you. But I'm sure they'll want to follow you anyway, because you tweet lots of interesting stuff.
You could do a British joke of the day.
Yeah, start tweeting some jokes. They'll like that.
See, that's an idea. But it's the internet. I mean, they can just type something into Google and get hundreds of jokes on there.
Yeah,
true.
They like how you harvest the jokes and pick the best of the best.
It's your taste that they want.
There means more coming from Jamie.
It's the taste of your jokes.
I'll try and do it then. I'll try and be innovative when it comes to jokes and put some on there.
All right.
Yeah, after 5 years, Jamie.
They should be pretty good, shouldn't they?
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been another fun show. Andrea, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we hope to have you on again soon. And Jamie, it was great talking to you. Hopefully we'll see you on again soon as well.
Let me stay.
Of course, you're always still a part. I still absolutely consider you a huge part of the show.
Oh, good, Andrew. I'm glad. That's nice.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Mike Tannenbaum.
I'm Matthew Britton.
And I'm Andrea Salazar.
We'll see you next time for episode 190. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 I'm Andrew Sims.
Who
knows how what the word is? Jamie, Micah, Matt, Andrea.
Okay.
You gonna start again then, or just?
No, go ahead. You can.
All right. No. I need the.
You need the flow, the
momentum that you. Yeah.
All right. Oh, one, two, three, four.